This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. At the State House, those who work in elder affairs appealed to the Senate Finance Committee yesterday. They urged senators who are knee-deep in the state budget right now to include more funding for Granite State seniors. Some of the programs they're most worried about are aimed at what's called aging in place. That's the goal of keeping older people living in their own homes as long as possible with a little support, anything from a regular meal to a ride to the doctors to in-home health care. And it turns out across the country, there's a lot of attention these days to aging in place, both the struggles around financing and some innovative arrangements that can make it work well. Today in The Exchange, what does aging in place look like in the Granite State? Let's hear from you. What do elders need to make this happen? When is aging in place not a good idea? And what are some of the innovations that might help? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have four guests for the hour with us in studio. Kelly LaFlamme, Program Director at the Endowment for Health, which recently published a report on meeting the needs of an aging population in northern New England. And Kelly, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Lisa Morris, Executive Director of the Lakes Region Partnership for Public Health. She helped start the Belknap County Service Link program, which helps seniors connect with services. And Lisa Morris, thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Russ Armstrong, member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging and Vice President of Monadnock at Home. And Russ, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Laura. Great to be here.
And also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. He's been looking a lot at some of the demographic issues here in the Granite State. And Steve, thanks for taking time out.
Thanks much.
Well, you've been talking, Steve, about an age-friendly community. You've written and discussed this a lot at various gatherings around the state. Just what's the ideal picture, Steve, of an age-friendly community?
Well, it's complicated, just like everything else. It's not a simple answer because the needs of different age people vary.
Right.
A 65-year-old person is very different than an 85-year-old person. And so in this conversation, you have to acknowledge that that age, that's 20 years difference, and you're talking about very different life periods for folks. But generally speaking, an age-friendly community is one that has appropriate housing, not a big mansion, but maybe a two-bedroom condominium, smaller places for people to live in. Transportation, which allows you to get access to food and to healthcare and to be social and engaged in the community. Obviously, good healthcare, because as we age, unfortunately, we need to have healthcare services. Opportunities for engaging with diverse populations, age and others. And then opportunities to volunteer, do work. So have a vibrant, safe life as you move into this next period. So those are the major components.
So do any communities in New Hampshire look like this or come close?
I think we are evolving as a state. We're just learning now about the nature of the aging process by the state. You know, we're the third oldest state in the country, but we're not old yet. So I think communities are now just starting to adapt to these new needs, these new demands for different types of housing, different types of transportation.
Yeah, and we've talked about those numbers a bunch of times, Steve, but just lay out for us again. We're always said to be one of the oldest states, but we're not old.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of these different ways of measuring it. One is the median age, and we have the third highest median age in the country behind Maine and Vermont, and that's 42. So it doesn't seem old to us, but that is old relative to the rest of the country. But we don't have a significant portion of our population over the age of 65 yet. For that, you look to Florida and some of these other places where retirees have always gone. So in about 10 years, we're going to see the peak aging for this state.
Kelly, I'm interested in how you would describe an age-friendly community. Steve talked about housing, transportation, opportunities for social engagement, and so on.
Yeah, so I would add to what Steve described also fundamental needs being met. We, with the endowment, we convened a group of stakeholders from across the state, and when we looked at what are the elements that create age-friendly communities, there were six domains, and Steve mentioned some of them. In addition, fundamental needs being met, support to caregivers and their families, and then also advocates that are engaged and effective in advancing the concerns of elders. All those things, those six things together, are what create age-friendly communities. And that's based on work that's being done at the international level by the World Health Organization and work being done nationally by AARP.
Wow, so the World Health Organization is looking at this. This isn't just New Hampshire or the rest of the country.
No, there's lots of work being done across the globe looking at how we support our elders as they age and building on the knowledge gained by countries around the world.
I asked Steve, I'll ask you too, Lisa. Are there communities in New Hampshire that sort of fit this description now or that are at least coming close?
I think it would be important to look at the different kinds of geography in the state. So for in our area, so we have Belknap County and some of the other communities attached to it, and it's rural. So it makes it more difficult for rural communities to have the level of connectivity, the level of housing, the transportation that you see in the more urban areas. But there are communities like Peterborough and other communities that are really trying to figure that whole thing out. The other thing that's happening, at least in all cities but smaller cities too and towns, is really looking at accessibility for all, so around planning. So planning departments are really looking at building communities that are more accessible, and they look at it for two reasons. One is economic reasons. So if the community is walkable and easily accessible, then the businesses are thriving in a way that they may not if those things don't exist. But that's also good for our older adults and people with disabilities and others, for all of us actually, to be able to get around more and be out more. And I think that that leads to better health and so healthy aging as well. So I think that you would really have to look at the diversity of the communities over New Hampshire and over the country. I think this is not just a national issue. This is a worldwide issue of aging. So.
Well, and Russ Armstrong, it's good to have you here, not only because of your role at the New Hampshire State Council on Aging, but Vice President of Monadnock at Home. This is a big priority for the Monadnock region, isn't it, Russ, this whole age-friendly community?
It is. In fact, it is a type of program that we're seeing more of around the country and, in fact, internationally. There is a village called Monadnock at Home Village. There is a village in Amsterdam and Netherlands, and a village in Australia following the same model. But basically what we're trying to do is encapsulate in an organization all of the aspects that Steve started out with and Kelly talked about and Lisa talked about. And that's really empowering seniors to live in their own homes with dignity and wellness and bringing those resources together so that when our members need support, they call one number, and we make those connections for them. Whether it's – transportation is one of the biggest issues that
Well, I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
Yeah, transportation to the doctors is a major issue for us. One of the problems that we face is that we're geographically dispersed. We're in eight towns right now in the eastern Monadnock region, and our current serving area is a little over 300 square miles, but our catchment area is 500 square miles.
What does that mean, catchment area?
That means that when we talk about the eastern Monadnock region, all of the towns that we could, in principle, cover with our services would be available across 500 square miles.
That's a lot of miles.
It is a lot of mileage, and it creates some difficult challenges. I mean, the whole village movement got started based on a geographic group down at Beacon Hill. That's relatively easy when people are right next door to one another to marshal those resources. More difficult when you get into an urban environment, rural environment.
It's tricky because we say that it's good for folks to age in place, i.e. Right. stay in their own homes. On the other hand, if their home is, 20 miles out of town, it's hard to do the other stuff, right, Lisa, that you talked about. So it's kind of like you're trying to put together two very different things.
When people come into our programs and they're looking at the future, one of the things that we talk about is where they're living right now and whether it's accessible universally, their home, can they get around, but also what level of access do they have to services? And so lots of people really consider, especially if they're going to downsize, moving into more of the urban areas may not be the right word, but more congested, that's probably not the right word either, but you know what I mean, areas so that they do have the level of access and the universality that they need.
Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at this idea of aging in place, how New Hampshire is approaching this topic. And as we're hearing, it's a discussion going on not just around the country, but worldwide, making communities more age-friendly. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And Russ, as I understand, you got into this whole field because you had some challenges surrounding your own folks.
I did. In fact, in 2000, we moved my parents from Swansea up to Belmont, right next door to where we lived at that time, and to try to keep an eye on them, making sure they were eating correctly and their needs were met and so forth, but yet allowed them to live independently because they weren't right immediately with us. My mother started developing dementia, and it got to the point where my dad could not handle her medical needs and her physical needs. And I really, at that point in time, had no idea where to get started on getting them help. And my wife found the number 4 service link that was in just getting started in Laconia with Lisa and Nancy Bacon. And I called that number up, and Lisa and Nancy came out to the house, and we sat down and evaluated my parents' situation, and they came up with a long list of community support services that we could avail ourselves of to keep my mom at home with Dad. And using those resources, we were able to keep Mom at home with Dad 2 years beyond where she qualified for nursing-level care.
Wow.
Eventually, it got to the point where he just could not handle it, and we had to place her in a nursing home. But
as long as possible.
It's a classic example of what we're really striving for, both keeping people in the communities for their well-being, but also the economics of it, because
well,
it cost
yeah.
a whole lot less to keep my mom at home than it did to have her go into a nursing home.
Yeah, and Steve, real quick to you, and then maybe after break we'll talk more about the economics of aging in place.
Yeah, absolutely. It's as we just talked about, it's less expensive to live in your own home for a variety of reasons than it is to stay in a nursing home. But like everything else, it's a spectrum of needs. And you start out in a place where you have relatively low needs and the support services are relatively limited. As you age, you use more resources, you become a little less more demanding and of healthcare and support services. And eventually, a fairly high share of those over the age of 85 wind up in a nursing home for the reasons that we just discussed.
All right, we'll dig into that a little bit more after a short break. And again, the number for you to join us as we talk about aging in place in the Granite State, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at aging in place, the idea that most seniors prefer to stay in their homes instead of institutional care, like a nursing home. We're looking at some of the programs, grassroots efforts that support that goal, and also some of the economics around it. Also, some of the challenges, appropriate housing, transportation, and so on. The exchange number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Steve Norton, just before the break, we were diving into the economics of this, talking about how, you know, aging in place may require some expense, but often less expensive than a classic nursing home, for example.
Yeah, I would say over the last 15 years, the state, through its actions around the state budget and public finance around long-term care, has really tried to shift as much of the focus away from institutional care to home and community-based care, which is what we're talking about here over time. There's another dynamic here about the economics, and that is we're aging, the workforce is aging, and that is an incredible potential resource for the state that we need to think about, both in terms of how we meet the needs and demands of that group, but also how we support them as a workforce going forward. I think that AARP uses the term the new longevity economy, which is
that's putting a positive spin on it, because so often this is negatively spun.
Well, and I think as was said earlier, this is not something that's New Hampshire is alone going through. This is what everyone's dealing with in industrialized countries across the world. There are certainly states that are younger than us. You know, Utah at median age 30 is quite a bit younger. But so everyone needs to figure out, how do we live in a world? How do we work in a world? How do we have entrepreneurs in a world in which, you know, the average or the median age is 45?
And before we go to our listeners, Lisa, I did just want to go to you really quickly, or Kelly, actually, I think. Aging in place, does that necessarily mean, okay, my house now, I'm going to live there forever? Or does that mean eventually, you know, I downsize, I move to a condo, but I stay in Concord? That's my community. I mean, what does that mean, aging in place? Because it connotes just kind of staying right where you are now.
Yeah, I think the discussion can make a distinction between aging in place and aging in community. And aging in place could mean staying where you are and I'm not leaving my home until they drag me out. Or aging in community, really having what you need in your community so that you can live a really independent and dignified way. And so in terms of living in community, you might live in a new type of living arrangement. You may even consider home sharing. There's the Moore Center based out of Manchester is innovating with a model out of Vermont to pair people up so that an older adult who still wants to remain in their home can be paired up with a vetted companion, or vice versa. An older adult who no longer wants to live in their home can live with somebody else. So there's a range of options that are possible to help people age in community.
Yeah, and that gets to some of the housing issues that Steve mentioned earlier. And I definitely want to ask all of you about that, because despite our aging housing stock, these big old farmhouses and so forth, there are some innovative ideas out there like co-housing and some of the other things that you mentioned, Kelly. But let's go to our listeners. And Jennifer's joining us from Nashua. Hi, Jennifer, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm really interested in hearing what your guests have to say regarding economics and staying in your house when people who are retired live on fixed incomes and yet the property tax rises almost every year. So how can people, regardless of health concerns, stay where they are when the state has such a regressive tax?
Yeah, Jennifer, thank you very much. This is an issue concerning housing and the state. She's right. The state's main source, or the community's main source of income, is property taxes.
Yep. And communities have provided the elderly with property tax exemptions based on income and age. So at least in part, that can deal with some of these issues. But the basic underlying fact is that for someone on a fixed income, the property tax is going to become a burden at some point, no question.
Do you want to jump in on that, too?
I was going to also agree with Steve around the towns do provide some assistance, but it's often not enough, and it's not uncommon for people who live in homes with high tax rates to look towards moving to a different location. It's just not possible for them to continue to stay in those types of homes.
Have you heard of people actually, quote unquote, losing their homes because of property taxes and on a fixed income? We hear about this a lot.
Mm-hmm. We have worked with people who have made the decision to go and locate housing elsewhere, to downsize in that case. Yeah.
And what's available for them, Russ or Steve or anybody? You know, Steve talked earlier about appropriate housing for an age-friendly community. Sometimes those smaller homes or those condos aren't available.
That's a very difficult issue. We really, as a state, have not grappled with that yet. Now, there are some communities that have senior housing, and it's scaled down housing with lower costs and so forth. One of the problems that we have is that there's not uniformity across the state. So the property tax rates in one town might be significantly different than another town. And so that the effect on seniors is different in those kinds of situations. More often, rather than losing one's property, more often seniors see it coming. And so they will start to downsize. My wife and I lived in a big house in Guildford. We're in a much smaller house in Peterborough now. It wasn't because of the property taxes, but it was the same process.
Sure, you've got to pay to heat it ahead. And property taxes.
Exactly,
and yet
exactly right.
It's just the two of you. So.
And there are some new options coming available. There's this alternate dwelling bill, Senate Bill 146, which has passed the Senate. It's in committee, as I understand it, in the House now. And that will allow people to modify their homes for caregiving or bringing their parents in to live with them in a more convenient way, going back to the way it used to be many years ago. But we aren't going to go back to the good old days. Those weren't really the good old days.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, we were primarily in the turn of the century on 1800 and 1900. We were largely an agrarian society still, and many of my family were still living that way. When you aged, you stayed with your children.
Big houses, big
and
families.
They had children and more hands to work the fields and so forth. That was the so-called ideal. But as we've gotten more industrialized and families have gotten more dispersed around the country, it's more difficult to maintain that kind of a model. So then what do seniors do in a situation like that? Well, if they've got one of these big old houses and they have options, for example, as in Senate Bill 146 would encourage, they have options for modifying their home, bringing in another family that could help take care of them. The co-housing is another one. We have an example with at Monadnock at Home with one of our member couple that are doing co-housing. Works great for many people.
Yeah, and Steve Norton, you've written about sometimes there are zoning problems locally, right? It's local zoning policies sometimes encourage aging in place, and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Imagine a community in which you have a five-bedroom home that is you can't break up. And it's right downtown, and that would be perfect if you could make it into a three condo unit to have people move in. And that often requires variances to the ordinances that exist. But now communities are starting to recognize that accessory housing units, allowing
mother-in-law apartments,
that's right, they still are, allowing communities to develop in a different way to reflect the changing demands and needs of the housing market.
All right, let's take another call. And Rod's in Meriden. Hi, Rod, go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm the president of the United Valley Interfaith Project, which is active in the Upper Valley. We've been working on the issue of aging in place for a couple of years, and I wanted to share a thing or two that we think we've learned up here about what works. And Kelly, I'm glad to hear that you're there. I enjoyed the get-together down in Concord recently. What we have found is that there are a lot of aging-in-place organizations that are popping up community by community. And one of the things that's happening up here is we're trying to get all of them together so that they learn from one another and find ways to, you know, connect to the medical home for each of the seniors that they serve. And so there's a really active program to bring them together periodically for idea sharing and experience sharing and so forth. Another thing we've learned is that community nurses are a really important resource, and they provide an important link between the senior in their home on the one hand and the community, but also the hospital.
Yeah, and Lisa, actually, thank you so much for calling, Rod. As I said, you have worked with Service Link, the Belknap County Service Link program, in addition to your current role as Executive Director of the Lakes Region Partnership for Public Health. This is, he's making a great point. There is all this stuff out there, if I could put it that way, but sometimes people just don't know where to start, like Russ told us earlier.
Well, interestingly enough, in 1998, our legislature agreed, and they passed Senate Bill 409 for two reasons. One is that New Hampshire is aging, and we can't use services the way that we normally did, which would have been nursing home because it's too expensive and we're aging, and that our older adult population, and actually everyone, was saying that it is very complex, the complexities of the healthcare and social service system. was too much to bear and that they needed assistance.
This is back in the 90s.
This is back in the 90s, but even we all have been through a situation where we've trying to navigate through healthcare or social services, and it's, you know, we may give up. And often people said they did give up. And so they established ServiceLink, you know, as one of the pieces of Senate Bill 409. So, yeah, so that's what we do, is we help people to understand what's out there and to navigate through the system. And we stay with them through that whole process of navigation. And people use us over and over and over again as issues come up.
So it isn't just, here's the number, here's the website, good luck.
That's correct. For some people, that may be the situation, but for most people, it's not. And often, the kinds of questions that people call with may not be the issue at hand at all. And so we help them figure that out.
Well, did you want to jump in too?
Yeah. So thanks, Rod, for talking about the work that you're doing in the Upper Valley and how bringing people together who are really expanding their creativity and coming up with innovative solutions to community needs. I mean, our New Hampshire's DNA is voluntary efforts and community responses. But like Lisa's describing, it's important that these community-based efforts are really meant to supplement the existing systems. And they can't supplant the role of government. You know, we really need both. And it's necessary for services like ServiceLink and Wheels on Meals to continue being provided, and then to channel the energy of the efforts that Rod's talking about to meet the supplementary needs.
Here's an email from a longtime listener who didn't want his or her name used. This person says, I moved my mother out of New Hampshire for care because the costs and services available in Massachusetts were so much better. Really, really glad I have, given the proposed cuts to ServiceLink, which has been extremely helpful in guiding me through a frequently Byzantine system. You know, this is not the first time I have heard somebody say, I moved my mom to Massachusetts. Steve?
Well, there's a complicated question there about what services are offered in Massachusetts versus what are offered in New Hampshire. And this particular circumstance, there may be other things that, you know, she moved south. But nonetheless, this last budget session is turning out to be a critical one, raising questions about how the state wants to commit resources or not to the aging process. Without question, the cuts within the DHHS budget to the aging portion were the largest in the budget in the House that came out of the House. So I think we're at a critical juncture. And I think the senators and members of the House recognize that. Not sure what they're going to do when they come out of this budget process, though.
Well, it's ongoing this week. This Health and Human Services programs were discussed yesterday before the Senate Finance Committee. You know, just a quick question for you, I think, Kelly. You said that these community efforts, these volunteer efforts, these civic efforts can't replace what government does. Some people would say, well, maybe they could a little bit more. I mean, if we're looking at a tight budget and we've got different priorities and we've got the needs of, you know, foster kids and aging bridges and so forth, could the public sector, by that I mean community efforts, step it up more and replace some of these government programs that are now being discussed for cuts?
Well, I think that the community efforts are already reaching more and more to help people in their communities than ever before. But without the infrastructure to help those, as Rod was describing, the infrastructure to help those entities interact and not duplicate services and not waste resources, because every church wants to have their own outreach program and every group of seniors in a community want to provide rides to other seniors who can't get themselves to the doctor, then we waste resources
so
when we don't effectively manage.
So it could be free vans roaming around the same area.
Right, and we've seen that before with transportation coordination across agencies. And so I think you need both. It's not an either or. You definitely need both.
Let's take another call. This is Tricia in Nashua. Hi, Tricia. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am working on a project in Nashua with my leadership group through the chamber where we're building an accessible playground. And we expect it to go in this summer. And what we have found in our process of educating people in the fundraising process is that people think, oh, accessible, this is for people with disabilities. But we've actually partnered with the senior center here because we really want something that's accessible in our community for people of all ages, all abilities, disability or able-bodied, but even if they're aging. And with our aging population, we thought that it was necessary to have, and also since seniors are often part of the caregiving process for children, we wanted them to have a place in our community where they would be able to interact with their children, not or their grandchildren, not just sit and watch them at a playground. So my question is, what do you, or do you know if other communities are starting to sort of jump on this concept of not just homes and buildings being accessible or age-friendly, but outdoor activities and amenities?
Wow, I love this question. Thank you, Tricia, because, Lisa, I know a couple people who are the primary caregivers for their grandkids.
Oh, that's very common now.
Yeah, we did a whole program on that a couple months ago.
Primary caregivers. But I do want to I think that's great that that's happening. It is happening in other communities as well. There's in Franklin and Laconia recently had a reimagine visioning kinds of community activities where they brought all the sectors of communities, both of those communities, together to take a look at what the needs of everyone in the community are and to figure out as a community how to meet those needs. So I think this thinking about serving everyone and making everything available and accessible to them is happening all over the state.
Here's an email from Tom. He says, could you please have Mr. Norton comment on their institute's prior study on New England housing stock and which communities are most innovative in allowing for the repurposing of our existing oversized houses? Too many who wish they could downsize are facing limited options. Thanks, Tom, for the email.
Yeah, so we did a study a couple of years ago that looked at what the housing stock is and what is going to be demanded. And in the future, people are looking for smaller homes, both older people and younger people. So and not too many people are looking for the quote-unquote McMansions of the 1980s and 1990s. So we are going to be in this position unless communities make it possible to redevelop and redeploy these old homes. And there's no community that's doing it perfectly well because the zoning laws are in transition. People's understanding of their communities is changing, as Lisa has said, and each community is going to have to go through this planning process. Think about this. The master plan in Manchester and Concord were done just around the Great Recession. And so all the migratory patterns have changed, and we haven't rethought what our communities are going to be like in this new world yet. And so no community is doing it perfectly, but we're getting better.
Tom, thanks again for the email. And Steve Norton, I know you need to go. Thank you also very much for giving
thanks
us your time
today.
Thanks
for having me.
That's Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Coming up after a break, Russ, I also want to hear from you on that playground call. And we'll take more of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, we check in with our political junkie, Ken Rudin, about some of the top political stories of the past few weeks. Join us for that tomorrow morning, live at 9. Right now, we return to our discussion about aging in place in the Granite State, some of the choices and challenges that senior citizens and their families face in trying to stay in their homes and out of institutional settings. The number here in The Exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. With us in studio, Kelly LaFlamme, Program Director at the Endowment for Health. Lisa Morris, Executive Director of the Lakes Region Partnership for Public Health. She's also been involved with Belknap County Service Link. And Russ Armstrong, member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging and Vice President of Monadnock at Home. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And just before the break, Russ Armstrong, we had a great caller from Nashua who talked about grandparents wanting to be with their grandkids at the playground and making those age-friendly. I thought that was really interesting.
There are a number of points associated with that. Now, first of all, there is a program called Senior Corps. Its funding sort of waxes and wanes as part of, I believe it's part of the Older Americans Act. But it is to engage seniors in those transgenerational programs, including playgrounds and so forth. One of the problems that we have is isolation and loneliness with seniors. And one of the ways to get around that problem is to get them engaged, give them a sense of purpose. There are books written about this. In fact, there's one that we were just talking about. Callie referred us to it called, it's Azul Gawande's book, Being Mortal. And the whole point is giving seniors a sense of purpose, and suddenly their lives are very enriched. Well, one of the ways to do that is to engage seniors in interactions with the next generation down. If you've ever seen a group of school children go into a nursing home, it's just so exciting to watch because that bond is instant between the grandparents and their grandchildren's age. And any way that we can utilize that bond is going to be great for seniors.
Well, and I love that call again because that's something I had not thought of, making playgrounds age-friendly. Let's take another call. This is Terry in Lancaster. Hi, Terry. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Way up here north of the Notch, the town of Lancaster seems on the surface to be very much a community, as some of you are describing. You know, my husband and I are in our 60s. We live out of town, but we can walk into town and have access to a movie theater, the bank, the grocery store, the library, the drugstore, pretty much everything we would need. But we're wondering, you know, our next step as we're making our plans, and what's underneath the surface? You know, what is the network there or the safety net? And I wonder if your guests can speak to that in some of the northernmost areas of the state.
All right. Do you want to tackle that, Kelly?
Well, I think reaching out to organizations like ServiceLink in their community is one way to know what resources are out there. And then as well, on the AARP website, the national website, there's a great planning toolkit that helps all adults. I mean, we all age. We're all going to be there someday. I'm in my 40s. I could start looking at this toolkit now to plan for the future. And this toolkit can walk you through the process. We hear a lot about financial planning for your future, but there's lots of things that you need to think about, lots of decisions that need to be made as you age. And there are tools out there to help you make those choices.
Now, that's really interesting. Talk a little bit more about that, if you could, Kelly. The idea that we're all bombarded with, you know, plan for retirement, save for retirement. You know, there's this option, but you're saying there's other stuff that... Well, it's financial, but it's bigger than that.
Yeah, so it's kind of imagining what you want your future to be like. And just like you are an adolescent planning what your future is going to be like, where you're going to go to college and what you're going to study and what you want to be when you grow up, well, there are choices that we can make to plan for the future as well as we age. And do we continue in the workforce because we financially need to, because it gives us meaning and purpose, as Russ mentioned? And how do we... create the future that we want for ourselves? And are we going to be connected to our children, our adult children, as we age? Or are they more and more living in other states far away? So what are the resources? Joining one of the village networks like Russ is part of is a way of planning for your future, because you may not need those services and supports today, but as you pay into them, you ensure that they're there for your future.
Lisa, I'd love to hear from you on this too.
Yeah, so this is something that that people are doing more and more. They're coming into ServiceLink, talking with our options counselors around how to plan for their long-term care needs. Because as we age, frailties come with that often, and the older we are, and we are getting older, so more and more people are living into their 80s and 90s, and so that causes further frailty. And so what are the kinds of things I should be looking at, which is what Kelly was talking at? And one of the things that we talk a lot about is to have conversations with your spouse, with your adult children, with your extended family and friends around what will it mean as I get older and become less able to do some of the things I do now? Where will you be? What can you help with? What can't you help with?
It's so hard to have that conversation because, A, a lot of us are in denial about aging. And B, you just don't know. I mean, we've all seen older couples, for example, where, you know, she's maybe really struggling and he's as, you know, fit as a fiddle. So it's hard to make that plan when there's so much unknown.
Well,
there's a denial factor too.
Kind of do know. We can guess. We can make a good guess around what's going to happen as we age. We can make that guess. And so whether it happens or not, to have that plan in place is very important. And to have those conversations is vital. But you are so correct that it is extremely difficult to have those conversations, both for the older adult and for their children, and their adult children. So, but... regardless of that, these conversations are vitally important.
Well, Terry, good to hear from you. And here's an email that came in from Sarah. She says, I use Service Link as a human services student. The links provided are often dead and phone numbers no longer in service. I also noticed that too many websites devoted for human services are completely inefficient. Quickly looking around for 211NH, I found a lot of dead links, outdated information. I've noticed the same issues with the New Hampshire DHHS site. Additionally, sites often contain lists of PDFs with irrelevant information. Seniors and caregivers are unable to help efficiently with incorrect info. Any experience with this, Russ, going to ServiceLink or 211NH, which is another sort of network of
sure, yeah. I haven't personally experienced that. I can well imagine that the problem is out there. But that's one of the reasons for having community connections. We talked earlier about not becoming isolated and just living in your home and that being your goal. That's not really the goal. The goal is to remain active and vibrant, and the way you do that is through these community connections. If those connections are maintained, then you've got access to the information. If they get broken, then it's not very, very difficult to suddenly lose contact, and you get into that kind of a situation. And that's one of the issues we grapple with our village program. We try to keep all of our members engaged in the process, and we can act as that conduit for information flow.
Engaged face-to-face.
Face-to-face or over the telephone. Same thing with ServiceLink. If you run into that sort of problem, call ServiceLink, and they'll have the updated information. It sounds simple. It's not. Life is complicated, but there are some assets to access.
Although calling ServiceLink, Sarah says in our email that she calls and the phone numbers are no longer in service.
So this is Lisa. So the database that ServiceLink has is very, very large, and there is a process for updating that database on a regular basis, but it's very, very large, and the level of resource that we need to be able to maintain that database far exceeds the resources that we have. But what we do is we ask people that if we give a link, a number to you and it's not working, please let us know so we can update that particular piece of the database. So it's a give and take. But most of the time, the majority of time, the conversation, we actually assist with those linkages. And so we will find out that those linkages may not be effective and then we'll make that change. But please, for the caller or the email, the person who emailed, please let ServiceLink know when it's not the correct connection.
Okay. Well, Sarah, thank you for commenting there. And again, the number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477 to Portland. Anne Marie's with us. Hi, Anne Marie. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to just discuss the micro versus the macro issues around seniors and aging and looking for locations possibly for my mother now that she's in her late 70s. What I'm finding is that there are more and more developments being built for people who can afford to pay upwards of $5,000-$7,000 per month in private pay to have a facility that has been built newly, is clean, and is staffed by high-quality professionals. And there seems to be this massive gap between the people who can afford that kind of care and people who might be just middle of the road or even low income to find decent housing. And I'm finding more and more that these facilities are cropping up that are very expensive and very out of reach for, you know, in New England, we have such an aging population, and I don't see that we're even on a macro level providing facilities for our aging population.
Well, Emery, I'm so glad you called. And she's right, Kelly. I mean, that's why we're talking about aging in place, right? Because these facilities, as nice as they are just, you look at them and it's like sending a kid to college. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, she makes a great point. And, you know, at the Endowment for Health, we focus our energy on the most vulnerable populations. And as we entered into this realm of elder health and aging a couple years ago, we realized that who we define as vulnerable may be different in the sphere of aging. Typically, you think of the most low income as the most vulnerable population. But there's a safety net that catches people who are the most low income. They're much more readily eligible for Medicaid. But it's those families that are in between the most low income and the most high income that are the most vulnerable in reaching out to accessing the services that they need.
So if someone said, look, there's no way that I can afford, you know, that type of a community as much as I might want to live there, I guess I'll throw this to you first, Lisa. So who pays for some of the services that are provided or that are needed for aging in place, whether it's, you know, that weekly check-in with the nurse or, I don't know, the physical therapy or someone making a meal once or twice a week? Who pays for that? I mean, Medicare is just hospital, right? And some help with prescription drugs.
Yes, Medicare does not pay for those things. But there are some services that have a sliding scale, so that's helpful. But even with that sliding scale, some people may choose or may not be able to afford to access those services. So there really isn't a whole lot out there for people who don't have very low incomes. So people with very low incomes have access to public housing units. The nonprofit housing development companies in the state tend to focus on housing development for young families. So they're not traditionally developing housing for older adults. So it is very difficult, and a lot of people end up having to stay in their home. Maybe their mortgage is paid, and they're on a very fixed income, but access to other services may not be available.
So Medicaid for your average sort of middle class, lower middle class person isn't going to help pay for the nurse who comes in once a week?
Medicaid, if you are eligible for Medicaid, Medicaid does pay. And if you're homebound, Medicare will pay, but not for a long time need. For a short term need, Medicare will pay.
You know, I remember, Russ, a long time ago doing a show on long term care insurance. Again, the idea that Medicare and Medicaid really don't often pay for what folks need to age in place. But there was some concern about long-term care insurance, too, and whether it helps folks age in place or whether it's more directed at people who are going to be in nursing homes.
There's no easy answer to that question. The problem of long-term care, my wife and I have looked at long-term care, for example, and decided not to go there, and that's a personal choice. But the difficulty is knowing ahead of time where you're going to be, and you're getting this insurance policy that may or may not meet your needs. And that's one of the situations that we've had recently, especially with the economic downturn and the recession of 2008, where long-term care insurance companies were raising rates because they weren't getting enough return on their investment. And it was trapping people that were policyholders into having to pay an increased premium or losing everything they've ever put into it.
Wow.
So
yeah,
those are
once
very,
you're in, you don't want to jump
those,
out.
Those are very difficult issues to deal with the long-term care insurance. There's a couple of other aspects of this, too. It's a major issue. The State Committee on Aging is really worried about this issue of the people in between, people who have the money, they have the resources to get the help they need, the people who don't, as Kelly mentioned, they have that safety net. It's those in between. There are some programs, and Lisa talked about some of the programs. If you happen to be a veteran, that's something else that people overlook. If you're a veteran, there are programs to help you out. But you have to know about that, and the veterans sort of slip between the cracks on that. One of the things you find out with veterans is that, and I am a veteran, we tend to be very self-sufficient. We don't want somebody else helping us. Give it to someone else who needs it more than we do. We're taught to serve, not be served. And that turns out to be a barrier. When you're in a situation and you're a veteran and you need that help, the help can be out there, but you have to know how to look for it. And sometimes you need help getting over that barrier.
Wow. Well, where do you think this is going to go, Lisa Morris? I mean, if we talked, you know, 2 years down the line about aging in place, would we say that New Hampshire is more prepared, or would we be in panic mode, or what?
I guess it depends upon what happens during this biennium with the budget, because there are many infrastructure and safety net services that are looking at being eliminated. So if that's so, then we're in trouble, because the whole goal is to really prepare our communities and to prepare, which includes the people and all of the sectors within the community on how to manage living in a new world of aging. So we need to keep moving forward in that. There are a number of services and supports that are in place. People need to know what they are, and ServiceLink can help them with that. We are starting to get into the veteran community now, where we are going to be teaching others around veteran services and supports that are available, which is great, which is, I like that model, where we're actually taking our knowledge and moving it out into other organizations and companies and other sectors within the community. So I think that that the future holds, and Kelly said this very eloquently, that it's a combination of formal and informal services that are going to work together with an educated population to make sure that people have the support that they need in order to live healthfully and independently as they age.
All right. All of you, thank you very much for being here. Kelly, thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Laura.
Kelly LaFlamme, Program Director at the Endowment for Health. Lisa Morris, thank you also for your time.
You're welcome.
And Lisa Morris, Executive Director of the Lakes Region Partnership for Public Health. Russ Armstrong, good to see you. Thank you for being
great
here.
Great to see you again, Laura.
Russ Armstrong, member of the New Hampshire State Committee on Aging, Vice President of Monadnock at Home. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Today we say goodbye, good luck, and thank you to Dylan Morrill, our wonderful intern. Dylan, good luck in the future. Thanks for all the hard work. I'm Laura Kanoi.